724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn. It's a pretty day out there. It's obviously not as hot as it has been, but it's very pleasant outside. In fact, I just stepped outside for a couple of minutes just kind of to check it out because I knew the temperature was only in the 60s and not expected to get out of the 60s. But with the sunshine, it's very pleasant, you know. And for a lot of folks, the temperatures that we've had for the past week been a little bit too much. You know, we hit 90 yesterday. We were close to 90 every day for about a week. That was very, very unusual. And what we have today is actually normal. This is seasonal for the tail end of September. The average high, the normal high for Butler on this date is 69. And we'll be in that area at 66 right now. And the sun helps a lot, no question about it. Yeah. Most folks say, okay, time for a little more seasonal weather. After all, we're almost to October. We'll be there on Sunday. Pumpkin month, huh? Halloween month. We could use a little rain. We might get some tomorrow, but then again, maybe not. I can't remember the last time it rained. I'm serious. I cannot remember. I know it rained in September, but I can't remember. It's got to be 2 weeks, isn't it? Yeah, I think it's got to be 2 weeks. Everything's bone dry. Well, it's been nice, though. It's been nice. Can't really say Indian summer because it's too early for that. And I expect we'll have some of that weather in October sometime. I hope so. I don't think we'll see 90 again, though. No. We have a good program lined up for you today. We told you yesterday that we were in the process of trying to line up somebody from the TV program that's doing the taping out at Moraine State Park this week, and we have. And we're going to be chatting with her in just a few minutes via the telephone. Her name is Deborah Talley. She's a vice president of Fishing University, which is a TV fishing show. And it's one of the longest running outdoor, I guess, one of the longest running outdoor shows in the country. It's been around for a long, long time. And they're taping episodes out at Lake Arthur this week. I think they've been there since the beginning of the week. Well, anyway, we'll talk to Deborah about that. I have a lot of questions. I wonder how they decided to come here. I'm happy that they did. As I understand it, the programming that they're taping out there this week won't be shown until next year. There's a lot of post-production that has to go on, and they have to edit it, first of all. You know, they shoot tons of videotape. It's all digital these days, not actually on tape. But and then they have to edit it down to, I think it's half-hour shows, I believe. So we'll talk to Deborah a little bit later on the program today. Also scheduled to visit with us today, our guests from Armstrong, a company that's, gosh, Armstrong's been around here for a long, long time. Back in the 1960s, I think. Yeah. We're going to be talking about their a program they have going. It's one of their community service programs, of which there are several. And this has to do with fundraising for dogs, I believe. I don't know whether it's service dogs. I'm not sure. We'll get the details. Deneen O'Donnell and Carl Rose are scheduled to visit with us a little bit later on the program today. And also today, another interview with an administrator from one of our area school districts. If you've been with us over the past couple of weeks, it's been very educational for me, very informative. We've talked with several school superintendents, top administrators at school districts around the region, and our idea was just to get kind of an overview of where the schools stand these days. We know that most schools are are losing student population because families are smaller these days. People are getting married much later, and they're having smaller families. And it's showing up a great deal in the schools. But it's still amazing what the schools around here are doing in terms of the internet technology and all of that stuff. We'll be talking with one of the, I think it's one of the cutting-edge schools. It's the Mars Area School District today. The superintendent in Mars is Dr. Wes Shipley, and we're scheduled to chat with him a little bit later on today. Mars, I believe, for the past few years, has been one of the few school districts in our area that's actually been increasing in student population. They've had a lot of people move into that district. The Mars District includes Adams Township and Mars Borough, of course, and there have been quite a few people that have moved from the North Hills of Allegheny County into Butler County because taxes are a lot lower, and their kids are going to the Mars Area School District. They have a wonderful campus. We'll talk about that with Dr. Shipley a little bit later on the program today. It has been most informative. So that's our lineup of programming for today. I think what we're going to do here is take a quick break because it's just about time for us to hook up. We're going to be Deborah Talley, I believe she's out at the lake where they're filming today, but we're going to be talking to her on the telephone. She's not here in the studio. We'll find out about how they chose Lake Arthur as the I've seen some of these fishing shows. I'm not a fisher person, a fisherman. I don't know, Pat Parker, do you fish? Have you ever fished? Yeah, I have in the past, but it's not a hobby that I've pursued. So I have no idea how they, is the word out that Lake Arthur's a good, a lot of people fish there. Maybe the word's getting out across the country. We'll ask Deborah about that when we chat with her coming up here on the It's Your Turn program for Thursday, right after this word.
Up to us, we're going your way. Getting there stops here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus, no car, no problem. The bus will get you there, 'cause that's what we do. Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us. We're going your way.
Listeners, you may not be aware of it, but we're getting a real treat here in Butler County this week because there is a nationwide TV show that's doing some taping at one of our beautiful spots, Moraine State Park and Lake Arthur. We're going to talk about that today with our guest, Deborah Talley, who is Vice President for Program Development with Fishing University. Deborah, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us on the program for a few minutes here today.
Yes, thank you so much. It's great to be here.
So your crew and your stars are taping episodes at Lake Arthur all week long, is that right?
Not quite a whole week. We're just in town for about 5 days.
I see. Well, you've had pretty good weather so far, I would imagine, right?
We have. Everywhere we have been, we've been on this trip for 2 weeks now, and everywhere we've been, they said we brought the hot weather with us, so... I think today is going to get a little bit cooler, as it will over the entire weekend, back to more normal temperatures like it's supposed to be.
Now, is that better for fishing? Because I don't have much expertise about fishing. If it's too if it's too hot, is that not good for fishing?
Well, no, not necessarily. They tend to like weather a little bit cooler. And if it's too hot, they go a lot deeper. It's a little bit harder to find them. Mm-hmm. But the one thing you don't want to happen is a drastic change in the temperature while you're fishing, because then they get all mixed up. They don't know what's happening. So, but they do tend to like it a little bit cooler.
Well, tell us a little bit about the program, internationally televised, Fishing University. It's been on the air for a long time, hasn't it?
Yes, it's the second longest running outdoor show of any kind anywhere in the world. Been on the air for 32 years, which today's world, that's almost completely unheard of. And been on the Outdoor Channel the longest amount of time, but was picked up in the last few years also by the Sportsmas Channel and WFN World Fishing Network. We are seen in all 50 states and 51 other countries. So it is an international show, and the area will get a huge amount of exposure.
Wow, I think I said earlier, nationally broadcast. I didn't realize you were in that many countries. Wow, that's great.
Yeah, it's great. Well, I think it attests to the fact that it's such a universal thing that people enjoy being outside and doing outdoor activities. And fishing is one of those activities that anyone can do. You know, it doesn't matter where you are, what part of the country, if you're in hot or cold weather, or what hemisphere you're in. It's just one of those activities that you can enjoy at your leisure, or it can be your business venture if you want to do tournaments. So, it's something that the whole family can enjoy. It's not a particular age group, or you don't have to wait till you're an adult to do it. It's something that everyone can enjoy doing starting at a very early age. So I think that's why the universal appeal is there for so many people.
By the way, the taping that you're doing out at Lake Arthur at Moraine State Park this week, that won't be seen on TV until sometime next year. Am I correct on that?
That's correct. We do all of our taping, obviously, right now in 2017 for showing in 2018. And this particular show that we are filming here will be seen 12 months. It will be seen three times in the first quarter, three times in the second quarter, and then six times in the third quarter and six times in the fourth quarter.
Oh, wow.
So, yes, a great deal of exposure for the area for people to learn about and want to come here. Another aspect that we do in the show is a tourism portion that we will be filming tomorrow, and that goes into more details about everything that's offered here, not just the great fishing, but in a way to bring the entire family in. You know, we try to not just focus on that aspect, but other things that are so great in your area, which I know it's a very historic area, and I know that a lot of people will want to learn about that may not be aware of everything that has happened here in the past. And, and then there are great shops, and there's great eateries. And so we try to focus on lots more things, so it does bring in the entire family. If Dad wants to fish or just a few of the family members want to fish, that everybody will have a reason to want to come and hopefully fill up your hotels.
Well, we talked with Jack Cullen, who's the president of our local Butler County Tourism and Convention Bureau, and he said he was very proud to have Fishing University come here and showcase the beauty of Moraine State Park. Can you give us a brief rundown for listeners here on the radio who maybe have never seen the show, Deborah? What's the format? Do you have the same hosts every time, or how's the program structured?
Yes, the hosts have been the same the entire time, and that is Charlie Ingram. He's pretty much a legend in the world of tournament bass fishing, and been to the Bassmaster Classic 8 times, been to the FLW Cup 5 times, and been fishing, for a very, very long time, has made his living that way for a very long time. And the other co-host of the show is Ray Brazier. And Ray is also a tournament angler, but he really is best known for his racing career. There's so many different outdoor and sporting activities that are intertwined with each other, and we're also very much involved with NASCAR and Indy races, and that is because we share the same sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, Charlie and Ray will make appearances at those Indy and those NASCAR events for those sponsors, and then those sponsors sometimes come along with us whenever we're filming the show. So, but the two guys, Charlie and Ray, are each in their own boats, and then we have with us on every single show two other guests that come. And the show that we're filming here, we have Chris Lane, who was the 2012 Bassmaster Champion, and he's from Gunnersville, Alabama. He is in the boat fishing with Ray. And then we have the president of of Optima, not Optima batteries, I'm so sorry, with Battery Pros out of Knoxville, Tennessee, and he is with us as well, and this is Kevin Bennett is the president of the company, and he is in the other boat with Ray Fishing. And so the format is, it's a friendly day of, it's a competition between the two boats as they're talking about how they're fishing, because we really are the original how-to fishing show, being the name of the title of the show, Fishing University. They chat about how they're fishing, the particular baits they're using, but then also they talk a little bit about the battery company and it's, and Lithium Pro batteries and, you know, what, how they are, used in, boats and not only boats but in different applications, and that's kind of the format of the show. They come together in the halftime of the show and they have their boards to kind of show their weight halfway through, and then at the end of the show they actually show their boards to see who's won the, you know, for the day out fishing. Mm-hmm. And although we're here filming for 4 or 5 days, it actually on TV looks like it's just one day of fishing. Mm-hmm. So it's just the, that's just the magic of TV and how we have to make it look like that. But it is a nice format that you learn a little bit, you're educated about the area, and we make it a fun thing so that not just your most avid anglers want to watch. It's something for everyone to watch.
So you edit it all down to a nice, concise 30-minute episode, huh?
Yes, that's right.
Now, tell me about that. I'm interested in the format. Listeners, if you're joining us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, I'm Dave Malarkey. We're chatting by phone with Deborah Talley. She is Vice President for Program Development of Fishing University. Now, this is a show that's been on television internationally, the U.S. and 50-some other countries, for like 32 years. And they're here in Butler County at Moraine State Park, taping a program this week that will be seen many, many times next year. So how do you do this? You've got either Charlie in one boat with a guest and then Ray in another boat. Do you have a camera crew in another boat that's never seen? Or how do you capture the video, Deborah?
We do. We have a camera crew on each of the boats, and of course they're not seen. Mm-hmm. And then loaded on board all the boats, we have GoPro cameras under the boats, under the water, top of the water. But the most of the real action is captured by our camera crew, and yes, they are in separate camera boats, filming them as the guys are out there fishing.
Boy, with all those GoPro, it must take a while to get set up to do a shoot, huh? Wow.
Yes, you know, people think we're going to go out and do something for just a few minutes, and we're like, no, that's going to be 4 hours. we need a little two-minute segment. Yeah, it's about 4 hours of getting everything ready for it. That's why we're in town so long to do each segment. Now, we do have one other part of the show that I haven't mentioned, and this has been a part of the show now for about 12 years, and our viewers, we probably get more calls about this than anything else that we do, and we're very proud of this part of it. And we go into a high school, and every location that we're in, a high school that's chosen by the Tourism Bureau that they want us, you know, to go to, and we talk to the kids. We present a one-hour program about the importance of a great education and careers in the outdoors. And we bring along with us, of course, Charlie and Ray, the two guests that are on the show that we're filming there. And then we also bring along two other guests with us that are from that particular area that can share with the kids about their journey that brought them to their career in the outdoors. And, you know, kind of to open their eyes and let them know that there's a lot of other things and a lot of other career options that they may not have even considered in the past. So we're going to be at Seneca Valley School District tomorrow morning presenting our program there. Mm-hmm. And it's a one-hour program, but we do use a two-minute segment of that within the show itself. And then we actually put the kids on the show, and they're airing. We let them do our teasers, you know, like you've all seen before. Stay tuned for Fishing University and see Seneca Valley High School on the Outdoor Channel. So they love doing that. We tell them all we're going to make stars out of them. But we do leave with a very important message, and that is that, you know, with your education, you certainly are going to go a whole lot further. And joining us are going to be two people from this area. Will Taylor, who is the manager at Jennings Environmental Education Center.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dustin Drew, who is the state park director at Moraine State Park. And he, of course, is going to be talking about, you know, jobs and responsibilities of the different folks that work in a state park atmosphere and, but, you know, those options that are available. So we love that part of our program, and we love being able to share that with every community that we go into.
Well, that'll be fascinating. I can't wait to see the show, to be honest with you, because there's quite a story to tell about, you know, Moraine State Park and Lake Arthur. It's an artificial lake that was created, but it was created in the image of a glacial lake that was in almost that same spot thousands of years ago. So it's a fascinating story there. I'm sure that Dustin Drew and the other folks will mention that at least.
Yes, I think so. I know I've had the opportunity to spend a great deal of time with Jack over at the Butler County Tourism Convention Bureau, and he, as a matter of fact, took me on a couple-hour tour yesterday of Moraine State Park and really told me all the details about how it was formed. And so mm-hmm. it'll be, like you say, a very great story that they can share and that we can also then turn around and share with our viewers.
Yeah, and when the original Glacier Lake collapsed, again, this is thousands of years ago, the rapid drainage of the water created the Slippery Rock Gorge, which is a little bit further
yeah.
downstream at McConnell's Mill, and it's a fascinating story. Well, listen, how did you select Lake Arthur and Moraine State Park for this? I mean, do you have researchers who look all over the place for beautiful spots and good fishing spots? How did you pick us?
Well, yes, kind of, sort of, and we really look to areas that maybe a lot of the public is not completely aware of.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to have huge lakes. You know, I came to Fishing University about 5 years ago, and before that I was the National Tournament Marketing Director with Bassmaster Weekend Series, and so we had to have very large lakes that could accommodate 400 or 500 boats at a time.
Mm-hmm.
For us, we're looking for smaller areas that maybe people have never heard about, you know, people that want to promote their area and tell the rest of the world about the great resources they have. And so we don't want to go to places that have been overused and overvisited all the time, but new places for people to learn about, and places that, like I said in the beginning, appeal to the whole entire family, that has so much more to offer than just to run to a lake and fish and go home, you know. And so, as a matter of fact, the way this one came about, Charlie and Ray both steel fish in fish the tournament trails, both mm-hmm. the Bassmaster and FLW. And Charlie was on his way back to Tennessee, where he lives, from New York, where he had been fishing. And he passed by and he saw the lake. He called me on the phone and he said, "I want you to find out about this lake here." And he said, "It's called Moraine State Park and it's Lake Arthur." And so that day, that minute, we got on the phone and called, and Jack answered, talked to him on the phone, and he went, "Okay, let's do it," just like that. So,
wow.
So that's exactly how that came about. But you are right. We do have people that are always out looking for really good spots to film that will make a really good story that a lot of our viewers, you know, will want to come and visit.
Well, it's a good fishing lake. It draws fisher people from all over the place. In fact, you would not see this at some of your great fishing lakes down south. Lake Arthur freezes over, and it's a very popular ice fishing spot for you.
I've been told that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
we don't have anything that freezes over. So, yes, I mean, they told us yesterday about your ice fishing festival and your winter festival, and I would love to be able to be here to see that. It sounds fantastic.
Have you, because I know you've been out there mostly on weekdays, have you seen any sailboats out on the water? They're gorgeous if you get a chance to see them.
Yes, we took pictures last night right at sunset, Jack and his assistant, Tiffany Hernandez, that works there as a marketing director, and took me out yesterday to the park, and we spent some time. But we were there right at sunset and got some beautiful pictures. And then when we all met back again for dinner, our camera crew had also gotten gorgeous pictures that we'll be able to use within the show. So, yeah, it will be gorgeous.
That's great. And by the way, in the wintertime, they have ice boats. Sailboats, but they've got runners on the bottom.
Yes, I know that would be cool to see.
Fantastic, fantastic. I'm going to show my almost total ignorance about fishing because I'm not an expert. Now, Charlie and Ray, you mentioned that they still fish on the tournament trail, the bass tournament trail. When you're videotaping this segment for this show out at Lake Arthur, are they fishing specifically for bass or for a specific kind of fish, or do they just...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, our show is strictly about bass fishing, they're fishing for bass.
So
that doesn't mean they didn't catch lots of other things, but those, and the bass, we put everything back. We're very much about catch and release. We don't keep the fish. We don't harm the fish. We're... Mm-hmm. Very much involved with legislatures in different areas of the country that need help talking to their lawmakers and policymakers when it comes to, helping the different, the lakes, the streams, the rivers, to keep them as clean and healthy as we can. And we're very much involved with that, with lots of different areas that call on us from time to time. So, but this show is totally focused on bass fishing.
So I'm guessing that whenever you're doing your how-to tips and your tricks of the trade, which are inserted into the program, you're telling folks who are watching about what specific kind of lures to use if you're going after bass instead of something else, right?
That's right, exactly. And where it's good, where it's lily pads. I understand you all do have a lot of lily pads here. And whether it's lily pads or whether it's weed beds or whether they're deep or whether they're shallow and how to fish at different times of the year depending on the weather. So that's primarily what it all goes into.
One final question. I had an idea for if you ever decided to change the name of your show to Fishing University, I thought you could use School of Fish, and I thought, whoops, that won't work. That would be kind of misleading, wouldn't it? School of Fish.
There is a pro that it's not there anymore. It was for a few years. The name of that show was Schooled in Fishing.
Ah, okay.
Schooled in Fishing. So, I don't think it exists anymore, though.
little play on words there. Hey, listen, we appreciate the time, Deborah, and we certainly appreciate you and your crew and Charlie and Ray and their special guests coming to Lake Arthur to film. And we will really look forward to seeing this airing many times, actually, next year.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we have loved being here, and I appreciate you having me on the show. And I'll let you know ahead of time when it's going to be airing, so you can let all the listeners know about it, and they can be watching for it as well.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Hey, thanks again, and nice to talk to you, Deborah.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Come to tell you, I know so little about fishing. I really, kind of embarrassing to talk to somebody who's an expert like that, but when you fish for bass, you don't go out into the middle of the lake, right? You kind of stay close to the shore. You're looking for little, I don't know, inlets or eddies or something like that. Listen to me. I'm trying to sound like I know what I'm talking about. I have no idea. I'm just wondering where they are, because they're out there today. Now, obviously, it's a perfect day. They're going to be filming tomorrow. Weather a little shaky, and I think, she said they're going to, they're all going down to Seneca Valley School District for an outdoor program tomorrow anyway, so I'm sure they're out there. Well, I don't know, maybe you fish for bass early in the morning instead of, I know nothing. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing that when it's on TV. It won't be until next year, but, it might be early in 2018, who knows? It's not all that far away. Deborah Talley said she would let us know whenever they have it all scheduled. They got to take all that tape that they have, all that recording back and edit it and so on and so forth, put it all together into a nice compact show. But I'll be anxious to see what Lake Arthur and Moraine State Park looks like on TV. And there's probably at least a little bit of fall color out there, such as we have it today. Not a whole lot, and I'm not sure there's going to be a whole lot, given the dry conditions that we've had. Oh, well, we appreciate being able to chat with Deborah Talley from Fishing University, taping, recording out there at Lake Arthur today. We have more to come on the It's Your Turn program today. We've got guests coming in from Armstrong on the next segment of the program. And later still, we're going to be talking with another school superintendent from the area, the superintendent of schools in the Mars Area School District, Dr. Wesley Shipley, scheduled to join us a little bit later on the program today. So let's take a break, and we'll bring our next guest into the studio and get situated, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with more of It's Your Turn here on WISR.
Hi, it's Kayla Molzan. I'll be at Swift Audiology with WISR on Thursday, September 8th, as they do free hearing screenings. Kate from Coffee with Kate will be with me as well, and we'll be giving away lots of prizes. Swift Audiology will be doing the free hearing screenings. They're located on South Duffy Road in Butler Township. It's all free. Did you know that hearing loss has recently been linked to an increased risk for developing Alzheimer's and dementia? So stop by Swift Audiology in Butler, the rear of the Deschamps Plaza, Thursday, September 28th, 2 till 4, with WISR.
When is the best time to talk to your family about staying in touch during a disaster? When floodwaters reach your door? When wildfires are engulfing the edge of your neighborhood? Or an earthquake is destroying buildings? When a tornado is tearing through town? Or a hurricane strikes? Or is the best time, perhaps, today? During a disaster, you may not be able to stay in touch with your family or friends as easily as you think. And it's not always as simple as using your cell phone. That's why now is the time to take action. Go to ready.gov/communicate and make your emergency plan today. Don't wait. Communicate. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Do you have an Amazon Echo, Tap, or Dot in your home? If you do, you can load the new Butler Radio News skill and get the latest local news, sports, and weather from Alexa anytime you want. The Butler Radio News skill is the area's only skill to offer local news, sports, and weather. To get the skill, open your Alexa app, search for Butler Radio News, and enable the skill. It's that simple. Alexa, what's in the news?
From the Butler Radio Network, here is the latest news.
The Butler Radio Network is proud to be a leader in providing up-to-date local content to you on the devices you use, on your radio, your computer or tablet, your smartphone, and now on your Amazon Alexa device.
Welcome back, good friends. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program today. And we certainly enjoy welcoming a couple of guests from Armstrong here into the studio to talk about one of their many community service programs. And boy, they've had a bunch of them over the years. Let's say hello to our guests. First of all, Deneen O'Donnell is here. Deneen, good to see you. Nice to have you here.
It's nice to be back. Nice to see you, Dave.
Mm-hmm. Deneen and I know each other from other places. So.
We do, from way back, huh?
That's right. And also, Carl Rose is here. Carl, nice to have you here today.
Nice to be here, Dave. Thank you.
Yeah. Carl is your general manager.
That's correct.
Of the entire operation.
Well, the Butler Cable operations here, sure.
I'll tell you, the reason that I ask, Armstrong is growing so rapidly, and it's been growing steadily, that it's hard for a lot of us to keep track, you know?
Yeah, we don't know where half of it is either. No, we are actually have 13 offices, and we're within, I think, 6 states, New York, Maryland, Ohio, West Virginia, Kentucky, so we're pretty well scattered over the, I guess you'd say eastern, Central, Eastern, whatever you call that.
I can understand why I'd be a little bit confused. My engineer tells me if you can pull your chair in just a touch closer to that mic, that's grand. That's perfect, Carl. Thank you very much. Thank you. So the program we want to talk about specifically today is Healing
Heroes.
And Deneen, what's Healing Heroes all about?
So Healing Heroes is an initiative that Armstrong is doing to raise money to buy medical service dogs for veterans within Armstrong's footprint. Veterans who deal with post-traumatic stress issues, who deal with physical disabilities. These dogs are trained to specifically help veterans. They can open doors. They can retrieve medicine. They are a calming device. They help veterans really reintegrate back into society when they haven't been able to.
Mm-hmm. Is this, and this might sound like a dumb question, is this the little logo with the dog with the blue scarf? Is that, am I thinking of the right thing?
That's absolutely it.
Okay, because I'm an Armstrong customer, so, you know, when my bill comes every month, I see that thing and I say, well, that's a really neat logo. It's an attention getter. But I want to make sure I wasn't mixing up programs here.
No, that's it. And Armstrong's goal was to purchase... They started with five dogs, and we're going to match the funds for five dogs, match community and employee donations.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done very well. And I think, Carl, if I'm not mistaken, the last number I heard was we're up to eight dogs.
Yeah, I think, this is as of probably a week or so ago. We had raised about $117,000 to the generous donations of our supporters within our footprint, not just our customers, but people mm-hmm. that live within our footprint. And with the Armstrong match of about $55,000, that brings a total of about $172,000 that we've raised towards this goal.
Is it expensive to obtain, and I would say probably more expensive even than that, to train a service dog?
So the cost of a medical service dog, a guardian angel dog, is $22,000.
Mm.
Which really puts it out of reach for most normal people, of course. And with this funding, these dogs will be provided to veterans who qualify without them having to pay for the dog at all. And we're actually still raising money to buy the dogs. We have all kinds of things for sale in our local office. We have a beautiful carved wooden dog by Ken Tynan that we're selling tickets for. And
I know Ken. He's been on the program here a couple of times.
Yeah.
He's the chainsaw artist.
And it's beautiful. So please stop in the local office and see it and buy a ticket. We have T-shirts and hats and little cute German Shepherd stuffed dogs for sale. And now I think the challenge is we are trying to reach out to the public to let them know that we are looking for veterans, anybody who has information about veterans who may require or make use of a dog. We're trying to encourage people to go to the medicalservicedogs.org to apply. They can find out more information there, and it doesn't have to be an Armstrong customer. We hope that they're within our footprint, but if they're close, that's good too. But we want to make sure that the dogs get into the right hands. So that's a big part of the reason we're here today also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had two goals here, Dave. The first goal, of course, was to raise money. And through the generosity of everybody, that has definitely not been a challenge. But our second goal was to make sure we get the information out to people on who to qualify and who qualifies and how to get that information to a qualified veteran. And that's been the tricky part of this,
mm-hmm.
For a lot of reasons. But we wanted to make sure that, because we can't talk directly to the people for privacy matters and so on and so forth, so we want to make it, just get the information out. So here's who you can contact. If you know somebody that needs a service dog, here are the qualifications for it, and here's the application process, and here's how you can go about it. It would break my heart at the end of this if we couldn't find a local person, and you know how this works, it's all said and done, mm-hmm. and somebody will put their hand up and say, well, what about so-and-so, and they're like, wow, how did we miss that? I feel really terrible if we miss somebody like that, very deserving person locally.
Well, on the other hand, though, the way you're doing it, you have to do it that way. There's no, I mean, there are people who are qualified to examine applications and know what to look for and so on and so forth.
Exactly.
And, you know, you folks, you don't do that, you know.
Right. So it is a process, and quite honestly, some of the people have difficulty getting through that process. So what we want to do is identify not necessarily their name, but if someone knows of somebody, we can get the information to them.
Okay.
And say this is who you contact, and one of the people. I mean, we'll, of course, you have our names and everything that can contact us, but we have information available that we can leave here, websites and all that. But we work with a guy from Actually, he's the owner of Veterans Cable, and his name is Tony Accomando, and he himself is a Vietnam veteran. And he's kind of, we're working with him to be kind of the middleman here.
Mm-hmm.
So here are some qualified people who help them through the process. We don't want something to fall apart in the process. So
he works with, did you say Veterans Cable?
Yes, he founded Veterans Cable, and originally it was started back in the 70s or 80s after the Vietnam War. He himself is a veteran, and he wanted to employ as many of them as he could, so he started Veterans Cable, and that's what he does. So he's a super person, but he's kind of volunteering to help this process through. So,
well, I can't be talking to some folks from cable television and about Tony and being a Vietnam vet without mentioning in passing the Ken Burns series that has aired on PBS nationwide for the past 2 weeks. Unbelievable.
Okay, yeah, well, you're talking to a Vietnam veteran, and quite honestly, I did not watch it.
Mm-hmm. No. I can understand that, Carl. I can understand that. Yeah.
And I think those of us who listen to veterans like Carl, that program has really helped you to get it a little more. Some of us, we just don't get what veterans have gone through.
Have an idea of what Carl and others feel. Absolutely. I can understand. I talked with several Vietnam veterans. We took this show out to the traveling wall that came to Butler about a month ago, I think. No, I don't remember exactly when. But I had some guys here in the studio, first of all, and then the day that it opened, we did the show from out there, and I talked with several of them. I talked with some Gold Star families, and it was a moving day. I understand where you're coming from exactly.
Yeah,
I will tell you this, though, for people who wanted to learn more about what was happening there, it was a pretty riveting series.
Yeah, I actually had my daughter watch it, and she called me up after a few series and said, wow, this is real. I had no idea that this is all this went on. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an eye-opener for the community.
Yeah.
It wasn't around back then.
Power of television.
That's right.
Yeah, power of television. So, Healing Heroes. Now, this is strictly an Armstrong initiative. Are other offices other than the local Armstrong offices involved in
all of the Armstrong offices are involved in all of our different areas that Carl mentioned. And you can find out more information about the whole program. You mentioned our logo with the dog with the cape.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go on armstrongonewire.com, and that logo is on there, and you can click on there. There are videos that you can watch to see the training these dogs go through, and the applications are on there, and all kinds of information. So you can get to the medical service dog website also by going on to Armstrong One Wire.
These dogs are amazing. You know, there was a time when we thought Lassie was about as smart as a dog was going to get. A long time ago, I can remember my sisters watching that show, and sometimes they'd cry, and you know,
Lassie.
yeah. But then, you know, as we grew older, we became aware of service dogs, mainly for the visually impaired. That was my first introduction to them. And then in recent years, I've seen some stuff about some incredible ways that these dogs can be trained. I was not aware, though, of medical service dogs, so this is new to me.
It is, you know, these dogs, well, I think anyone out there who's listening, if they have a dog or any kind of pet, can relate to how therapeutic they can be when you're going through stress yourself.
Mm-hmm.
These dogs can actually detect, and we've seen this happen, and if the veteran is speaking and he starts to get the slightest bit anxious, the dog can sense this immediately, and the veteran may not even realize himself that he's getting anxious, and this dog will absolutely sit up, put its paw on his lap, put its paw on his chest, and nudge him, and it's just instantaneous that this dog knows this. And we should point out also, this is not just Vietnam veterans. This is any veteran who has served in any kind of war at all. Any veteran is eligible to apply for these dogs.
Sometimes I've read quite a bit about post-traumatic stress syndrome in service personnel, veterans. It sometimes doesn't show until years or even decades after a service. So don't think we're just talking about recent veterans coming back from, you know, Afghanistan or Iraq or Vietnam. Any veteran, all the way back to World War II, God bless them if they're still with us, they're in their 90s now, but post-traumatic stress can surface any time later in life.
Typically, what they tell us, there's an estimated 22 veterans commit suicide each day, and many are suffering from the post-traumatic stress disorder. So, like you mentioned, Dave, people struggle with it for years, and then finally they just can't cope with it anymore. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we want to do is, before they get to this point, is to have something like the Guardian Angel Service Dog that will prevent something like that from happening. And just as a side note, as of a week or so ago, this was true, and still is, as far as I know, that no veteran has committed suicide once they have received a dog from Guardian Angels.
I can believe that easily. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's it is not restricted to any age group. It can affect people, like you mentioned, decades later.
Every time this subject comes up, I like to talk about it because there was a period. I think it's changing. I hope it's changing. There was a period when a lot of veterans didn't like to talk about this. If they had these feelings, they hid them. And it wasn't necessarily any sort of false sense of, machismo or something like that. It was just something that you didn't talk about. Hey, we deal with it, you know. Well, and we've studied more and more about it. Medical researchers have studied more and more about it. They know a lot more about it now. And hopefully, veterans of whatever age are realizing that there is no embarrassment, there is no shame whatsoever about having post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right. And even if they're embarrassed, like it can be an embarrassing thing or something that they don't want to admit, we have had instances where family members have applied for the dog because the veteran didn't realize himself that he was having these issues, but the family sensed it. So that's why it's important for the public to know, if they know anybody that they think, that reminds me of John on the next street or whatever, this is the opportunity to get this information into the right hands. And we can't go out and say to counselors and ministers and people like that, hey, you have any names of veterans? But if they hear this, they may think of someone also that they're counseling or supporting, that they can pass this information along, that these guys can apply.
And once again, what would they do? Would they contact this website that you gave, Deneen, or would they?
Yeah, the easiest way, since we're from Armstrong, is to just go on our website, and you'll see that logo, like you said, and underneath there is the website for the service dogs. But they can also go to medicalservicedogs.org, and that takes you there. There are subtitles up there that show the application, and there are videos that show what the dogs can do and all kinds of information about it. So I encourage everyone to take a look and see what it's all about.
I would also try to make this as simple as possible for people. Say, if you just want to call the local cable office and ask for the manager, ask for Carl personally, you know, I'll take it up at that point and make sure people follow through, because sometimes they'll say, go on a website and people just say, I don't want to leave any stone unturned, so to speak. So I'll just call me directly and I'll help them out from there. And not necessarily need to know the name of the person, but we'll get them the information directly.
Doesn't surprise me, by the way, knowing the local service that Armstrong has provided low these many years. I called very late one night because of a problem I was having with Zoom, and some wonderful woman talked me through. First of all, I couldn't believe I was talking to a real person. And she talked me through the problem, and 10 minutes later, I was back in business again.
Well, we've won a lot of national awards because of that. And I don't know if I can mention the magazine or not, but anyway, there's a national magazine, Consumer Reports,
that has
rated us at the top, or at very near the top. On our customer service and our internet service.
I'm glad you mentioned it, because there's a lot of ratings out there. I see them all the time, and I kind of scoff at some of them and go, who are these people? But Consumer Reports, J.D. Powers, there's some that are on the up and up. Yeah, yeah. I didn't realize that. That's great. Yeah.
Yeah, we're very proud of that, actually. So, yeah, it's one of the things that separates us from competitors and everything, but we're able to do things that maybe they can't. So
if you are a veteran of any age who think you may qualify or may be in need, or if you know someone, don't hesitate to call. For goodness sakes, what a tragedy that would be if they might qualify here and they ended up not getting a dog because they didn't ask.
Yeah. Mm, so right. To make it even easier yet, Dave, I did bring along a application, a waiting list for the applications. You can actually see it here, and I actually have a list of the requirements to see if you're, you know, for qualifications. So I can leave those with you here. So if someone just walks up and maybe you want to just hand them that.
Sure, say, absolutely. We'll be glad to do that.
As easy as we can.
And if a veteran qualifies, this is all free of charge?
It's free for them. They'll actually send them to Florida to train with a dog that they will sort of pair them up so that they can get used to each other. They have training that they go through so that they know how to command the dog, so to speak. And the dogs get to know them very quickly, very quickly. So,
part of the application process, too, quite honestly, is the, are you financially capable? Because you know when you own a dog, own a pet of any kind, there are some financial responsibilities. You have to make sure you take it to the vet and everything. Mm-hmm. That is on the dog owner, but there are minimal costs. You know.
Well, that's understandable. And quite frankly, I would be disappointed if they didn't check that out in advance, because there's nothing more sad than to see on the local news a situation where animals have been mistreated and malnourished and all that sort of thing. Yeah, the last thing you'd want to happen to one of these dogs.
These are very expensive and very highly trained dogs, and they just don't want to just hand them out. They want to make sure that they give them to a responsible person and qualified and responsible. And also there's a responsibility on the other end, too, for the owner. I mean, you can't just, it's not a pet, it's a working animal. And so you can't just leave it at home and go on a trip for a weekend or something. Yeah, you have to take it with you 24/7. So
they usually use labs or German shepherds. I think those are the two most popular breeds for this sort of work.
Yeah,
first of all, they're very intelligent animals.
The ones I've seen were all German shepherds. Mm-hmm. So they probably have a golden retriever. I think I did see once, but the bulk of them are German shepherds.
I've seen several stories on TV of returning veterans, and these would be more recent from Afghanistan, who worked with dogs when they were overseas in the field, and then when they came back, those dogs have there's a limited time period that they can do that. And some of the, you know, the veterans who were handlers of these special dogs, they pair up with them when they get back home again. Those are wonderful stories.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I think that's changed over the years. I'm not sure they did that back in my time.
I'm not sure that they use dogs as much as they do these days, because, you know, they've got to be sniffing out IEDs and, you know, that sort of stuff that we didn't deal as much with in previous years. But it's just, I mention it only because of the incredible relationship that can develop between person and dog. Yeah.
They learn to know each other very well. And you'll notice the dogs are marked, and people have probably seen this, just like a blind dog. They have vests on that identify them, and you really shouldn't touch a dog like that, because they are working and you don't want to distract them.
Mm-hmm.
So
good point, Deneen, and a good lesson for you know, people who are out with kids or families. If the kids got to do that, and there's a good good learning lesson there. No, not the working dogs. You know?
Right.
So we had a one here, just locally here at an event, and we had the owner was here, and I kept telling my wife, "Do not pet the dog."
Mm-hmm.
And I'd wait 30 seconds and say, "Do not pet the dog." Do not pet
That's
the
tempting.
Dog. Yeah, you just can't resist it. But there they are. But. Yeah, it's not. They are not pets.
Right.
They're working animals.
So, how did Armstrong get involved with this? I mean, the company has a rich tradition of community service work, community service projects. You have projects involving food. I know, and I can't think of the name of it now, but you know what I'm talking about.
Breaking bread.
Beth, thank you very much, Deneen. Thank you. This seemed like a good way to extend your community involvement.
Yeah, I think part of it was the association with the man I mentioned before, Tony Alcamondo, who owns Veterans Cable, and through the state associations and everything, we got to know him very well, and he's, of course, very active in this. And so we ask him, you know, well, what can we do as a company? How can we help out? And so that's how it started.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the statistics, like I mentioned before, the veteran suicides and everything, that's seemed like something we should do.
And as far as we know, up to this point, no veteran has taken his own life after they've paired up with one of these dogs.
At least not with the guardian angels. I've read the stories, a lot of it, they call them comfort dogs, so they're not necessarily highly trained service dogs like these, and I've read those in the paper and seen them online, and some of those stories, they're what we call comfort dogs, and they're not the same.
That's a good point. Those are fine animals. That they're even used a great deal now in medical settings in some cases, personal care homes and so on, because of the feelings that they generate.
Exactly.
It's very good. And there are certainly well-behaved animals, and in some cases trained, but we're talking about really, really highly trained animals here.
I don't mean to demean the importance of a comfort dog. I'm just drawing the distinction between...
Oh, no. Didn't take it that way, no. Yeah. By the way, folks, in just a few minutes, we'll be talking with our final guest on the program today. We're scheduled to chat with the top administrator in the Mars Area School District. It's one of the few school districts in our area that is growing in student population. And it's a pretty neat school, I think. Dr. Wesley Shipley will be joining us a little bit later, a few minutes here on the program, and we'll chat with him. Wrapping up our conversation right now with Carl Rose and Deneen O'Donnell from Armstrong. Let's take a second to talk a little bit about this company. We mentioned briefly how you continue to expand and grow, and your footprint now is across, did you say, 5 or 6 states, Carl?
Right, New York, West Virginia, Maryland, Kentucky, Ohio, and I hope I didn't leave anybody out.
Started right here in our area, in fact, thus the
1964, name. I believe it was, and the first area we built was the south side of Butler.
Mm-hmm. And I think that Butler was one of the first, if not the very first community in Pennsylvania that was wired for cable television. It seems ridiculous nowadays, but this was back in the early 60s.
We were before Pittsburgh, I believe.
Way before Pittsburgh.
Yeah, 9 channels at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, we've been pretty far ahead of the curve, and there's... I guess there's some that we're working on right now to have a completely all fiber network, but we've always been up front with or out in front technologically, and there are no cable systems that we own that didn't have everything that somebody in New York City had. You know, we were right up there with the best of them, so we're very proud of that as well.
Well, it's pretty amazing today if you think back even a few decades. What was available on television compared to what's available today?
Yeah, I go back to the 12 channels, and now we're doing a fiber optic cable. So,
well, you know, the first TV I ever bought only had 13 channels on it. Right. That's all there were.
And technology's come a long way.
Yeah. In fact, I think I still had that TV when I first became an Armstrong customer, because you had to get like an ancillary tuner. Because Armstrong was already starting to expand their channels. I only had 13 numbers on my tuner on my TV.
Yeah, back in the old days, we used to joke that people had a 12-channel tuner and a pair of pliers laying on top of the TV to change the channels when the knob broke.
I see that I wasn't alone.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on your continued expansion, and thanks for your continued community service work,
yeah,
and this certainly is
an
exemplary of that, that's for sure.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
It was a pleasure.
Danine O'Donnell and Carl Rose visiting with us from Armstrong today. Okay, folks, we're going to take a quick break, just a minute, and then we're going to be chatting with our next guest, Dr. Shipley, Dr. Wesley Shipley from Mars Area School District. So please stick around. We'll be back with more of It's Your Turn right after these words.
That frightening sound is one we hear quite often throughout the day. Our heart quickens and immediately we wonder what happened. A medical emergency can be frightening. Every tick of the clock crucial. And that's why Butler Ambulance Service is dedicated to be there with every ounce of care possible. Butler Ambulance Service is within minutes of providing you or a loved one with treatment and transportation. Call 282-9595 to find out more. Butler Ambulance Service is a phone call away from serving you.
Hi, this is Dave Malarkey. Ever have a tough time getting the motor started early in the morning? I know what you mean. Well, maybe I can help. I'd like to invite you to join me every weekday morning, Monday through Friday, for the Early Morning Show here on WISR. We start with the first local news of the day, bright and early at 5:30. We go to 9:30, and oh yes, we pause for half an hour and have coffee with Kate at 8:30 every weekday morning, too. Please join me. I'd like to share the early morning hours, 5:30 weekdays here on WISR. Welcome back, good friends. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program today. And if you've been listening over the past few weeks, I think it was really a great idea. We thought we would visit with top administrators in school districts all around the area, not for any controversial reason whatsoever, far from it, but just to kind of get an overview of what's happening. We have seen across the state and across the country, most school districts are declining in student population. In some areas, it's a marked decline, and this has all sorts of implications for programs, for kids moving on to higher education, and so on and so forth. So we're just taking an overview of school. We've talked with several superintendents already, and we're most pleased today to be able to chat for a while with Dr. Wes Shipley, who is the superintendent in the Mars Area School District. Dr. Shipley, we've not met before, so let me shake hands through the ether here and welcome you to the program.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about the Mars Area School District. Well, first of all, what I just mentioned before, student population. We don't need an exact number, but do you have a ballpark figure on how many students there are in the Mars Area School District?
We're currently slightly more than 3,300 students here at Mars.
Mm-hmm. And you are one of the very few school districts which has been growing in student population in recent years, correct?
Yeah, that's true, and actually we've just completed a demographic study as we look at our facilities, and it was just completed for us in early August, and our 10-year projection is that we can expect continued growth, really ranging anywhere from low 300s to the mid-500s on top of our current student population. So we expect that we're going to continue to grow at a fairly steady rate.
Mm-hmm. Do you have sufficient space for that, or will you need at some point in the not-too-distant future to start to take a look at maybe additional classroom space?
We do have sufficient space in our current buildings. One of our issues that we're looking at, though, is our middle school it's in need of some repair. And so this gives us a great opportunity to take a look at all of our facilities and determine whether our current makeup of our classrooms in structure with each particular building holding. We have a campus model, so we have one building for kindergarten and one building that has grades 2, 3, 4, one building with grades 5 and 6, a middle school with 7 and 8, and a high school with 9, 10, 11, and 12. And because we do have a need at our middle school for some repair and renovation, this does give us an opportunity, looking at our demographic growth expectancy over the next 10 years, for us to determine, do we want to maintain that same structure? And but we would do have room now to continue to grow as we are within our own buildings. But we're still going to look at that at our facilities as we make those decisions moving forward.
Now, you mentioned you have a campus structure. Are all of your buildings at one location?
They're all fairly close, within a mile and a half of one another. Mm-hmm. Our high school, middle school, elementary school and primary center are all a stone's throw from one another, and then our Centennial School, which is our upper elementary, grades 5 and 6, is just a mile down the road. So they're all very, very close, yes.
I mention this because it's fascinating for many of us who are not educators, we're not involved in education, to watch and look at the way so many most school districts today are reconfiguring, you know, the age-old model of K through 6 and then junior high and then senior high. That seems to be pretty much out the window. There are a number of school districts within Butler County that have consolidated elementary schools. In fact, several districts have gone to just one elementary building. You have your Centennial School, which is older elementary students. Did I hear that correctly?
Correct. It's grades 5 and 6.
Uh-huh. So there's a big difference, obviously, between developmentally between 5th and 6th graders and 1st and 2nd graders. Does the
Absolutely.
The new model indicate that they perhaps do better if they're separated?
Well, I don't know if it's a matter of clinging to any one particular model, and that's why that was chosen here. I think it was a matter of viable space when that came to be, and the different buildings that were available to us and where they were located, and it just seemed to be an appropriate model for us. I think what's happening in school districts all around is taking a look at our current facilities and then our future needs, and then trying to make the best fiscal decisions that we can make as an individual school district based on what our current structure is, what our future structure may be, and what our physical plant currently is, and how we can make that work with the best impact on taxpayers as possible. You know, we don't want to sink a whole lot of money into upgrading buildings that may not have a whole lot much more usefulness in them, only to house a very small number of students. So each school district, you know, has their very, very unique decisions that they have to make, you know, for those very different reasons.
Yeah.
For us here at Mars, and this all happened prior to my time coming here, it just was a perfect fit with the number of school buildings and the space that was available, and it just seemed to work out for us just right.
What's the geographical footprint of the Mars Area School District? What municipalities are included in your district?
Marsboro and also Middlesex Township, mm-hmm. Adams Township, and Valencia Borough.
Oh, so you're rather compact, are you not?
Yes, we are. We're pretty small.
Yeah, yeah. We've talked with some of the other superintendents in the area, and some of the geographical footprints are, well, let's put it this way, there's some pretty long bus runs in some of the other districts.
It can get that way. Even for us, we're about 50 square miles, which is, even as small as we are, if you're in one corner of the district and you have to travel to the other side, it does feel like quite a trip.
Mm-hmm. This is, from what I understand, listeners, if you're just joining us, maybe you just jumped into the car, turned the radio on, who's on with Dave? It's Dr. Wes Shipley. He is the superintendent of schools in the Mars Area School District. This, as I understand it, is a year of significant change in Mars. Dr. Shipley, you're introducing some student information software. Am I correct on that?
We are. Student information software has been, you know, part of schools for a long, long time. The software we were using was no longer being supported by the manufacturer, and so we had to get a new system. And that is an enormous undertaking by any measure at all. And so we did do that. We've gone to a new system, and that includes all of our demographic information, all of our information with regard to our student grade books are in there, and it is just, it really is the backbone of all of our data within our entire district. So it was a large undertaking, still trying to tweak some of our problems that we've encountered along the way and trying to smooth those wrinkles out as we go.
So you no longer have a student file in a big filing cabinet somewhere, eh?
No, that went away a long time ago. We don't, not a whole lot on paper anymore. Everything's done electronically now.
Mm-hmm. What is Learning 180 Initiative? That's one. That's like your idea, isn't it?
It is. You know, as the times have changed, you know, so has instructional practice in the classrooms and the way we expect kids to learn and what we expect kids to produce in classrooms. And so I really wanted to spend a little time just trying to get the message out to our community and to share some of the great things that are happening in classrooms. And my objective is, when we talk about Learning 180, is really has two meetings, one being the 180 days of school and the 180 days of learning that occurs within a school year, and the other being taking a 180-degree view of what learning has become in the 21st century. I think a lot of people think of 21st century learning as it's all computerized. It's now that we have computers, learning is different. But 21st century learning skills is really more about thinking, and it's more about the questioning skills that occur. It's about the cooperative learning that happens in classrooms. It's about the innovation that's going in classrooms and it's how students are engaged and the metacognition. And so there's so much more involved in 21st century learning skills that's about the thinking and learning and the questioning and the teaching strategies that is so far beyond technology. And I really wanted to spend some time trying to send that message out to our community in a really non-threatening way to allow them to get a daily message of what is happening. So what I've done is every single day we have sent a message out to our community via our website and through Twitter. And so when you log on our website, you get a pop-up with a message. And they've been themed around every week we've had a theme. And we started with learning is authentic, learning is creative, learning is metacognitive, learning takes grit, and learning is engaging. And so every week we've built on that theme and just kind of talked about how, you know, things that studies have shown around those different themes, things that we know about student learning around those different themes, things that we know about instructional practice around those different themes. And then what we'd like to do as we move a little bit further is do some student spotlights and teacher spotlights of some of the really great things that are happening here at Mars Area in our classrooms based on the 21st century learning and teaching skills that are going on so that people can see there's really some really wonderful things that are happening. And the instruction in the classroom and teaching and learning isn't just sitting in straight rows and the teachers, you know, pouring out facts on a chalkboard anymore. You know, all that knowledge is available, and facts are readily available, you know, through the internet, and it's all at our fingertips. It's all about now digging deeper into the why and the how, and really questioning each other about how things came to be and why things happen the way they happen, and getting into that deeper meaning behind things. Hmm. And if you can really ask those kind of questions, you know, it could really lead you into some really deeper understanding.
So no more learning 1492, 1620, 1607. You can get that stuff in a heartbeat off the internet, right?
Absolutely. How many times have you been sitting around with your family watching a show and you say, when did that happen? And somebody brings it up on their iPhone sitting right there and you know, tells you before you're done even asking a question.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, who was that actress who was in that movie? And boom, you've got the answer before you were even done finishing the question.
So all that
easy what type of answers are so easily available to us. You know, we need to get into deeper thinking and more creative thinking.
So it sounds to me like, this is wonderful, by the way, it sounds to me like it's almost like what you see now in the public school year, certainly in secondary schools, is kind of what maybe a generation or two ago you would encounter in college, you know?
I would think so. I think that, you know, they've kind of talked a little bit about accountability shoved down, you know, that more and more difficult material is moving farther and farther down into our subject levels, into high school and middle school and even into our elementary schools. And the content is becoming more and more rigorous, and the expectations for student understanding is becoming more and more, the expectations are growing and growing, and we're expecting our students to do better, we're expecting our teachers to perform, we're expecting more and more from everybody, and our accountability at every level is held to the highest standard. And so I just wanted to use this Learning 180 initiative as a way to show everyone that schools have really changed. And, you know, because we went to school, you know, back in the 80s or 90s, you know, and we had that school experience, doesn't mean that what our children are experiencing is exactly the same thing. They're experiencing a whole new level of thinking and learning and understanding, and for different reasons. Our businesses are expecting our kids to come to them with different kinds of skills than what we were expected to bring to the table whenever we came out of high school and college years ago.
News out of Harrisburg, really, with just within the past month or so, State Department of Ed, Governor Wolf, indicating that maybe we are spending a little too much time on testing, and maybe we need to leave a little bit more time for work in the classroom. I don't want to put any words in your mouth or get you in trouble. Would administrators tend to agree with that? Have we been spending too much time testing and too much time preparing for tests?
I think that we spend an awful lot of time worrying about the tests and trying to prepare for the tests. And I think we all feel a sense of relief in knowing that the tests are going to be reduced by a day, each in English and in math this year. I think that's something that we're all feel happy about. But even with that, the sense that we're held to an accountability standard on how our children do on one set of tests in one snapshot period of the year, it just isn't a fair understanding of all the wonderful things that really happen in schools, because we're not looking at how our students who really have a focus in the arts, how they're doing as an overall student, and how our students who are more inclined you know, in the mechanical side, how they do, and our students who are performing so well in the vocations and do our Butler County Vo-Tech does incredible things, and just had a meeting yesterday with our county superintendents and our director of our Vo-Tech, and you know, we're putting out kids with the Vo-Tech itself over 1,000. I want to say 1,900 was the number that he shared with us. Certifications those kids came out with, and these are only the certifications that the state recognizes. They actually have more certifications than that when they come out. So these kids come out with wonderful skills, and it's a shame that we're judged by how our students do on one small set of tests that are given in a short amount of time, and the amount of stress that we put on our children to take these tests, and it's unfortunate.
For many of our listeners, certainly include myself in this group, especially when you got to secondary school. When we were in school, you know, everybody didn't take exactly the same thing, but it was pretty close, a couple of different tracks maybe. It sounds like kids in the Mars Area School District today have a plethora of options from which to choose, especially as they get into the secondary grades.
Well, we're really working at expanding the options that are available to students. We have been offering more advanced placement courses. This year we've aligned ourselves with a group called NIMSI. It's the National Math Science Initiative. And with them, we've been providing some training to our teachers and also to students to prepare them for AP courses in computer science and physics and the maths and maths and sciences. So we're real excited about expanding AP courses for them, and we're also just trying to provide more courses for just general electives for our kids. At the elementary level, we've created what's called a STEAM classroom as part of their special area rotation. Specials are those classes kids attend, like art, music, phys ed. Part of that rotation now every week is STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, art, and math. And so there's a dedicated course to that every week where the kids get a chance to talk about robotics and creating things from everyday household items, and it's really a great creative outlet. and they worked, the teachers and Mrs. Eckert and Dr. McMahon, my director of, Mrs. Eckert is my director of curriculum and instruction, and Dr. McMahon is my assistant superintendent. They've worked with a team of teachers to put together a really great elementary curriculum that is a continuum from kindergarten through sixth grade to really get those kids working together on STEAM concepts. It's really exciting.
I'd heard of STEM. I hadn't heard of STEAM. The extra letter, the A, stands for art, huh?
Yeah, it really provides a great artistic outlet to really understand that art, you know, is involved in this piece as well, because there's an artistic piece to the development and the mechanics of all this that happens. It's not just about when you design something, the designing is an art. It's not just the mechanics and the engineering of it, but in that design there is an artistic side.
I see what you mean. Yeah, we hear an awful lot. We're talking with Dr. Wes Shipley, superintendent of schools in the Mars Area School District, about 3,300 students there in Mars. We hear an awful lot about bullying today. In fact, I just saw a public service announcement on TV. It was a couple of nights ago. It was in a hallway of a school, and you know, some bully knocked the kids' books down and that sort of thing. Is that really as prevalent in schools as those of us who aren't in school anymore see sometimes on TV?
Well, I think that it's a lot more prevalent in our vernacular. We certainly talk about it a lot more than it used to be talked about. And so it's something that is a lot more in the limelight. And the good news about that is kids are not afraid to come forward and share when they're feeling as if they're being bullied. Mm-hmm. And we certainly encourage kids to come forward whenever they're feeling that way. We encourage other students to help those who are being bullied or being picked on to stand up. Sometimes, unfortunately, the word bully gets misused. And you know, in the one time there is ever a disagreement or two students just don't get along, sometimes someone will say, well, he's bullying me. You know, sometimes there just are disagreements, and we have to learn also how to work through opposition. And so that is really important that we have, you know, good understanding and good guidance from our teachers and our guidance counselors and our principals to work with our students to vet out the difference between student disagreements and misunderstandings and true bullying. Certainly we don't tolerate true bullying and do our best to bring an end to it. The unfortunate thing is real unfortunate true bullying, those types of students are pretty good at doing it in places and where it's done secretively. Mm-hmm. And done in a very covert way, and it makes it very difficult for us to do much about it unless someone brings it to us. And so we really work hard with those who feel oppressed or bullied and others who see it to bring it forward for us, because, as I said, those kids who are bullies very rarely do it in the open.
I wondered about that when I saw this public service announcement on TV, because after it was over, I said, I'm not quite sure that that's on target anymore, because my guess is that a lot of bullying takes place online these days with the smartphones and laptops and so on, you know?
We really have seen a lot of the bullying move towards cyberbullying, yeah. Which creates another large issue for us, too, because it becomes a very delicate line between whether it's school-based or whether it's home-based. We've had a wonderful relationship with our local police here who have worked with us whenever we're not sure whether that line is in the school or whether it's in the community, when they've been working with us when we have students who are experiencing cyberbullying. You know, the line technically is whether or not the bullying is creating a disturbance within the classroom, is whether or not the school should be taking action on that kind of behavior. Typically, though, because we are the center of the community, it in almost all cases we become involved in one way or the other, whether it's simply dealing with it ourselves or involving the police.
Are there still guidance counselors in schools? It occurs to me when you were talking about 3 or 4 minutes ago about robotics in elementary and so on. It's pretty tough today to try to train and educate students for careers that will be, 10, 12 years down the line. Some careers that we have today might not even exist, and some that we don't even dream of today might be the real hot jobs. That makes it kind of tough, doesn't it, to give career guidance?
Well, they do. It is difficult, and they tell us that we're training students now for jobs that don't even exist, and that's exactly part of the Learning 180 initiative, is to get people to understand that that's why it's important to teach children to think and to question and to work as a team, and those are the 21st century skills that we need to teach, because we can't prepare somebody for a specific job because it may not be there, whenever those students graduate. But we do have wonderful guidance counselors who work with students to do career counseling along the way. And whether that's leading students through field trips out to different companies where they can see skills that they're interested in action, whether it's taking them to a career day and hosting a career day within one of the buildings, or taking them to our VoTech, where they have an opportunity to see all the different programs that that VoTech provides. But we have guidance counselors in K through 12, and that job has changed quite a bit. And this year, our guidance counselors have been working on what is called a Act 339 plan, which is their guidance plan, which is due to the state in July. In the entire county, all of the guidance counselors in all the different school districts are working on their Act 339 plans together. They just made presentations on Monday to one another on where they are on career counseling, actually. And it's a place where it has made remarkable change over the years.
Let me ask you one more question. We only have about a minute left here. Some people consider art, music, sports extracurricular. I don't know. Yeah, but to me, they're an important part of the school experience. Would you concur, sir?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we're starting to take a much greater look at the whole child, and we understanding that different children are motivated by different things, and some kids are here because of their love of sport or their love of their participation in things like what the old CHOP class, which is now more of an engineering type of a class, or their love of music, and that's what motivates them to come. And their motivation for being here for their choir class or their band class propels them into where they are in their math class and their English class. So, they are co-curricular indeed, because every kid has a different motivator, and whether it is their how they perform in their co-curricular courses or whether it's in their core curriculum classes, whatever it takes to motivate a student or to move them forward into their next phase in life, it's all about the experience.
Dr. Wes Shipley, our guest, listeners, he's the superintendent of schools in the Mars Area School District, one of the few districts in the region that is growing in student population. And obviously, I got some pretty high-tech, ahead-of-the-curve educational things going on down there, too. Hey, Dr. Shipley, thanks for the time. I know you got a busy day. Thanks for telling us about Mars Area.
Well, thanks for having me. We're real excited about things that are happening here in Mars Area and all about our county, really. And I'm glad that we had an opportunity to share it with the people, with your listeners.
Sure. Nice to meet you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
One of our sponsors on the program today is the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. Their thrift store operates down in the greater Butler Mart. Very convenient to get to. It's very convenient to get into and out of. I was down there a couple of weeks ago dropping some stuff off, donating some items. And I literally parked. I was like 15 feet from the door. And the drop-off bins for donations are right inside the front door. Must have taken me 12 seconds. Very, very convenient. Have you been there lately? Well, you might want to take a look around. They've got a nice variety of clothing, shoes, miscellaneous furniture for apartment or dorm. Yeah. And they're always looking for donations because the proceeds from the operation of the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store help to fund their food bank and their client aid program. And, you know, this is stuff that you are probably going to throw away anyway, right? So why put it in the landfill? Why not donate it? They like to say we stand the tallest when we stoop to help others. It's a wonderful thought. Society of St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store, Greater Butler Mart. They're open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 74-74. The pick three, 333. Wild ball is zero for both of those. The pick four is 0529, and the pick five, 41096, also a wild ball of zero. The treasure hunt, 6, 17, 23, 24, and 29. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $30,000.
Welcome back. We thank our guests for being with us today, Deneen O'Donnell and Carl Rose and Deborah Talley and certainly Superintendent